This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, the European leaders, 28 member countries, are meeting to address the issue of immigration, primarily in particular to the flow of migrants travelling from Libya to Italy. And this is a priority for the EU. We've seen a flood of migrants, particularly into Italy in 2016, more than 180,000 crossing the Mediterranean, coming through different countries in Africa into Libya and then finally into Italy and Europe.
That's Josephine McKenna reporting. Details coming up.
Also, Doctors Without Borders warns of dangerous conditions for migrants in Libya. Some communities and family members in Nigeria have recently been engaged in branding children as witches or wizards.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the 28 EU heads of state are meeting today in Malta to address the ongoing migration of migrants and refugees to Europe. Their main focus is reducing the number of migrants who risk their lives crossing the central Mediterranean from Libya to Italy. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments as the meeting continues. She spoke with me about what the leaders hope to accomplish at today's summit.
28 member countries are meeting to address the issue of immigration, in particular to the flow of migrants travelling from Libya. And this is a priority for the EU. We've seen a flood of migrants, particularly into Italy in 2016, more than 180,000 crossing the Mediterranean, coming through different countries in Africa into Libya and then finally into Italy and Europe. They want to stop this flow. They want to create agreements with Libya to increase security, stop the people smuggling gangs, and ensure that rights are protected as well.
Also, yesterday we talked about European Council President Donald Tusk, who was presenting at this meeting what he says are concrete and operational measures. Do you have any notion as to what exactly he means by that?
Before the meeting took place today, the Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni reached a bilateral agreement with the UN-backed Libya leader Fayez al-Sarraj to put in place greater security, more training for the Libyan Coast Guard, and greater patrols and intervention to stop people human trafficking in Libya. Now, this bilateral agreement is considered to be the basis for discussion today to try and generate broader agreement across Europe. Today, they're looking at trying to get some sort of memorandum of understanding to increase cooperation to prevent people trafficking. That is going to be a tall order because, as we know, Libya is a divided country. In one of the Italian newspapers today, the EU Foreign Minister Federica Mogherini, an Italian woman, said to stop the flow of migrants is almost impossible. So most people involved in these talks actually recognize how divided Libya is, the lawlessness that's going on there, and the difficulties in trying to confront the human traffickers in particular and stop them from undertaking these voyages and forcing people onto these boats with very little security and safety.
Yes, I know that was another big issue that they were going to talk about, as you said, this network of traffickers and how to better manage the migratory flows that are going from Libya into Italy. So what are the actual people saying about this, the people on the ground?
Well, UNICEF and other organizations, including Doctors Without Borders, are particularly concerned that Libya is not a safe place, and they've been making statements about this ahead of the conference. UNICEF said, "We urge a move away from what they called migrant management based on the detention of refugees and migrants who are kept in inhumane conditions in Libya towards the creation of proper reception centres that offer dignified conditions and respect for human rights and protection for people who are travelling. But we know that since the fall of the former Libyan leader, Colonel Gaddafi, in 2011, Libya has lacked any effective central government and security is in the hands of various local factions. The country is quite divided. So the ability of this government to actually bring this under control and create a structure that actually protects people's rights is a great concern for the UN and other organizations.
What then is the expectation out of this meeting? Do you actually think they will have some concrete measures put into place that will slow the flow of migrants?
The European Commission is proposing an extra 200 million euros, around 200 million US dollars, in 2017 to try and help reduce this flow of migrants by offering greater support to the Libyan government and increasing the military presence in the international waters off the coast of Libya. Ideally, the EU would like to see a deal like it secured with Turkey, which really effectively stopped the flow of migrants overland via the Balkans into Europe. So that came into effect last March. That's been very effective and creating a significant reduction in the number of migrants using that route. But the instability in Libya really makes it difficult to see that that kind of deal could be reached regarding migrants taking that route from Libya into Europe. So it's going to be a tough call for the EU to really bring about effective controls and reduce this migrant flow. We've seen a steady flow of migrants even in the last couple of months in the difficult winter weather. And just a few days ago, 1,000 migrants were rescued in just one day off the coast of Libya. So there's no sign that this flow is going to slow down anytime soon.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
While European countries try to stop the flow of sub-Saharan African migrants from Libya, a medical aid group warns that conditions for migrants in Libya are dangerous and unhealthy. Libya is the main departure point for those trying to cross the Mediterranean. However, many are physically and sexually abused before smugglers put them in unseaworthy vessels. Thousands have died in boat accidents. Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, is providing medical care for migrants, refugees, and asylum seekers being detained in and around Tripoli. MSF General Director Ariane Hehenkump has just returned from the Libyan capital, from Amsterdam. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa that the political turmoil in Libya is making conditions worse.
The situation, the political and security situation in Libya is terribly complicated. We have three governments that are officially in place, competing with one another. And even in Tripoli, which is where I was for 3 days, where one government basically holds sway, the city is basically divided in areas that are controlled by different militias that have their own weapons and their own agendas. And so we're talking about a very fragmented and very unstable and fragile political and security situation. These militias are also the ones that basically are controlling the detention centers and are making money out of it by not treating these people very nicely. In fact, they very often abuse and certainly don't give them anything that we would like to think that people are deserving of.
How do these migrants and refugees and asylum seekers wind up in the detention centers in the first place?
Well, officially, they shouldn't be in the country if they don't have any paperwork. Of course, Libya has always been a place where migrants have gone to in order to be able to do work that wasn't done by the Libyans themselves. And so a part of the migrants that I've seen in detention centers are just basically people that have lived there for years and have been picked off the street and have been shoved into these detention centers. Some are people that have been picked up from border areas or from the airport that didn't have any papers and that have been shoved into detention centers. And then there's a final category of people that have been intercepted in front of the coast of Libya that have been returned and are now re-interned in these detention centers.
Now, I know MSF is working in those detention centers, and you touched on it earlier. Could you more in-depth describe the conditions that they face there?
I visited two out of the seven in which we work, and these are not centers in any normal sense of the word. I mean, they're warehouses, very often in an industrial sort of area. People are crammed into a very limited space without any light and without much air, with no access to toilets, with little water and very often not water that is suitable for drinking, and very little food. I've talked to guys that have been there, people that have been there for months, 8 months maximum, I heard. And people don't have a clue whenever they will be let out, on what conditions and for what reason they would be able to earn their freedom back again. And then there was one instance where a guy was talking to me about some of the abuse that they were getting, and he was doing so in hushed tones. And then at some point he just froze and he looked over my shoulder and there was a guard standing there, and clearly he was very anxious and scared.
We've had reports that women and girls have been sexually abused as well. Have you received those reports too?
No, we haven't received those reports through our work in detention centers. We are aware of the reports being made, but we cannot confirm it, partially because it's very difficult in order to be able to get sensitive information in working in these detention centers, because we're doing so under the glare of the people who control the center itself and with their acceptance. People are not very often comfortable to tell us what is happening in those detention centers.
So what message would MSF like to tell European leaders about the migrants, refugees, and asylum seekers in Libya?
It is abundantly clear from my visit and from our experience over there that Libya is not part of the solution. What happens over there is part of the problem. And so therefore, it is either completely naive or utterly cynical for the European leaders to pretend that they can stop people from leaving Libya and then return them and thereby solve the problem. No, what will happen is basically they will exacerbate the pressure and the suffering of people who are already suffering significantly at the moment. Part of the plan of the European Union consists of relying on international organizations in order to improve the conditions of detention in Libya itself. That must be one of those famous alternative facts, or maybe they're living in La La Land, because it is very clear that there's no international organizations. They don't dare sending their own diplomats into the country, and you will find very, very few international aid workers in the country. Most of them are sitting in the neighboring country in Tunisia, because the security situation isn't conducive for doing aid work in the country. And these are the conditions that they're wanting to send the most vulnerable back into. It's very clear that they need a reality check, and they shouldn't pretend that Libya is a safe country where they can send people back into.
Ariane Heijenkump is General Director for Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, from Amsterdam. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa.
The Zimbabwe government today introduced a new $5 bond note to try to ease the country's cash crunch. Reuters reports the introduction follows the release of a $2 bond note and a $1 coin last November. The head of Zimbabwe's Reserve Bank says $15 million worth of the new $5 bond notes have been released. That brings the total amount of bond notes now in circulation to $88 million. Some analysts have warned the move could trigger hyperinflation.
Also, the government of Zimbabwe is funding research on the impact of sanctions the country has endured for over a decade. They were imposed by the U.S. and the West for alleged human rights violations, including the taking of the land of white farmers without compensation. Kutsanavashi has more from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Ministry of Higher and Tertiary Education, Science and Technology Development has announced a consortium to explore the impact of the sanctions. John Dewa is the acting principal director at the ministry. At a recent press conference, he said the group will be led by Albert Makoche Kanwa, the chairman of the Department of Economics and the deputy dean at the University of Zimbabwe. Dewa offered more details.
A consortium of researchers to study the impact of Western imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe. An amount of $150,000 was availed to support the research.
Jonathan Moyo is a former information minister and current minister of higher and tertiary education, science and technology development. He explained the background of the sanctions in Zimbabwe.
I think it is common cause that since 2001, which is about 16 years ago, our country has been under Western imposed sanctions. We could say the rest is history, but within that history, we know that the discourse on sanctions has largely been political, in the sense that It has been the political players that have dealt with this question, largely playing out in the media.
Professor Moyo says the new research will evaluate the economic and social impact of the sanctions.
While all that has been happening, the reality of sanctions has been playing out in the real world of ordinary people, of business organizations, of education institutions. But the actual impact of sanctions, not their ideological implications, but their economic impact, their real impact in the lives of ordinary people, in the national economy, has not been systematically accounted for, audited, analyzed, understood. And yet this is very important.
Dewa said the effort will be completed in 1 year and the findings will be published in several international peer-reviewed journals. Moyo explains that the findings from the research will also influence policy.
Important not just for the sake of knowledge, but for policy intervention. It is not about looking back and indulging in history, but it is about understanding what has happened in order to have a basis for making informed policy on the way forward.
Political analyst Alexander Rosero welcomes the initiative but raises concerns.
The problem with such kind of research is because they are emanating from a ministry and are funded, you will hardly likely going to see anything that is against the expectations of the funder. That is the chief fault of that whole exercise. But the whole idea is we have to give it a chance. We see whether it will come to fruition.
However, Moyo says his ministry will be divorced from the research team with the exception of the coordinating person from his camp.
Our part, our responsibility was to make the decision that as people who are superintending over the sector of higher education, it will be in the national interest to facilitate an undertaking of this kind. But beyond the facilitation, we've no other role. We respect the academic enterprise, and we will only be anxious to know whether you are able to finish the exercise in the way your research methodology dictates, and hopefully within the time frame.
Zimbabwe's ruling party has constantly blamed sanctions for Zimbabwe's ailing economy. This is a move many say has been overplayed. Risero says the money will be better spent exploring how to avert the sanctions or find a way of ending them. This is Kudzai Zinawashe reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 23 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The 28 EU heads of states are meeting today in Malta to address the ongoing migration situation in Europe. And the Zimbabwe government today introduced a new $5 bond note to try to ease the country's cash crunch. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In Nigeria, some communities and family members have recently been engaged in branding children as witches or wizards. As a result, many children have been ostracized and others tortured to death. Dixon Salami Adama has more from Oyo in southern Nigeria.
The practice, which has been going on for about 10 years now, is mostly common in the southwest and south-south of Nigeria. Some families have combined efforts with their communities and church leaders to torture their children until they are sent to their early graves. Branding people as witches or wizards were initially among the aged, but it has now taken a different dimension and little children have become the culprits. The family's suspicion that their children are witches or wizards are often not authenticated by any genuine evidence, except by assumptions, either suggested by their families, community members, or church leaders. Their reasons for accusing the children are on the basis that several deaths have occurred in their family, or that the family is not being successful or has been going through hardships, among other accusations. All these are often blamed on the children. Thereafter, these children are subjected to inhuman treatment until they are killed. Some are tortured and banished from the community, while others are sent to the streets by their families and told never to return. Some good-spirited individuals and organizations have come to the aid of these children and constantly work to rescue them and bring them to a home where they cater for them. Umo Ntese, project assistant of Way to the Nation's Children's Center in Eket, Akwa Ibom State, South Nigeria, said they have several of such children.
90% of the children that we've come across, some of them are stigmatized as witches by their stepmom or the stepdad that don't want them to have full rights in their parents' house. When they come in, they don't want to see the children going to school. They'll stigmatize them as witches. When they are being stigmatized, they'll be sent out of the house to roam the streets. By roaming the street, they'll be scavenging for food to eat, begging food to eat.
One of the stigmatized male children said he narrowly escaped being killed by his father and his elder brother.
The reason why I'm here is since 2018, so my mother was sick, so somebody in our village come and accused me of witchcraft. So that day, my mother did not feel fine. So I went and called my father. I told him everything that have happened. So my senior brother don't even allow me to say anything. Just start to beat me and he warned me. And this is the mark. So my father took me away from the village and ran out to this place.
Also, a female victim said her father accused her and her sister of witchcraft, adding that he was having affairs with other women and her mother was no longer married to him.
They have been accusing us and saying that we are a witch, meanwhile we are not. And even my father has been calling us that you are a witch, that you don't do this, that you always take him to the witchcraft world. Meanwhile, it is a lie. My father, in the morning, he will be going out to meet this woman and meet this one and meet this one. So that is the problem that we had with him. My mother is no more marrying to him again.
Reacting, a legal practitioner in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State Capital, Barrister Godwin Odofia, blamed the churches for encouraging such practices in the communities, pointing out that they are doing so for their selfish interests.
Well, concerning the issues surrounding the branding of children as witches and wizards by some churches, legally speaking, there is no law that permits children to be branded as witches and wizards. Again, these things are done for the selfish interests of the leaders of those churches. In Akwa Ibom State, the state government has provided the child's rights law to protect the rights of children and also punish parents, guardians, or churches who brand children as witches and wizard and throw them out to the streets or wherever.
Some of those responsible for branding these children as witches or wizards do so on the basis of certain cultural and religious beliefs, but without constitutional backing. For VOA, this is Dixon Salami Adama reporting from Uyo, South South Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.